listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by West Wave Audio, LA's new API dealer. And now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez. And before we get going, I want to introduce...
Thought you better get back there and start it again.
No, I'm just gonna start. Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike.
Take six.
You
got a long 122. Okay, here we go. Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, I want to introduce the guys. Over here to my right, I have Martin Page.
Hey, Mikey.
And next to him, we have Scott Gershon.
Good afternoon.
And next to him, we have Bobby Somerville.
Hello.
Wait.
The Bobby
Who?
Summerfield.
Bobby? Yeah.
The
Who?
Bobby Summerfield.
Go on, give me a wind up.
Bobby is in the house. And next to him, we have Andrew Sheps.
Hello.
And next to him, we have Rob Arbiter.
Hello.
Guys, for the first time on the Audio Nowcast, we are all together.
We are.
Is this actually the first time? Yeah, I guess.
Well, with our clothes on.
The thongs count?
You got your trousers on underneath the table.
Yeah, watch that. Oh, that's a tent, mate.
Well, it's good to see everybody, and boy, I hope we make it through.
This is going to be a tough one.
This will be
a
tough
one. End of the
one.
Year. I was looking at it that way.
But yeah, this will be our end of the year podcast, because after tonight's podcast, we are going to take a break, and then we'll come back from the first week of the new year with a couple really exciting things. We'll have a new sponsor, and the show should sound a heck of a lot better, and we're going to have a an updated
for audio guys.
That's right. Yeah. We're gonna have an updated website, and there's just gonna be a lot of really cool changes.
So who's the new sponsor?
Well, Hooter Secret, isn't
Kmart.
It?
It'll come out when they show.
So what's Pizza Hut pictures do?
You're gonna have a lot of editing. That's all I'm telling you.
No, this is fun. I just wanted to go over a couple things really quick before we get going. Number one, I just found out that Bobby was actually nominated for an Emmy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Congratulations,
Biggest
Bobby.
Stripper in town.
And what was that nomination for, Bobby?
Oh, God. Pagey. Actually, it's for music in One Life to Live, a daytime soap opera.
Oh, that's great. All right.
We have somebody here who's talented.
I know. Well, congratulations. And,
thank you, dear sirs.
And hopefully, you know.
Hopefully you win, Bobby.
That's right.
Yes, thank you very much.
And then you've got to bring it in and show it.
That's
to
right.
You've got to show us. Audience.
And if you don't win, you can always just, you know, pretend like and we'll tap like.
Cool. Well done. I'll bring a bottle of Coke in like that.
There you go.
Hey, Bobby, do you have your tuxedo ready and everything and the whole thing ready to go and the limousine
and
the whole thing?
Yeah,
lovely.
Of course.
Lovely.
I like to thank the Audio
ready
Nowcast.
For the last 25 years.
All right, with the big
old,
no news.
With the big ruffles.
It's purple.
And that's your pimp clothes.
And a big bow tie. Yeah. Exactly. But congratulations.
Yeah.
Thanks,
everything.
That's
buds.
Great.
Thank you very much.
That's great, Bobby.
Yeah, it's good.
Thank good. You, mate. Congratulations.
Yay. Thank you.
So we have one other nominee at the table that no one knows about.
Okay.
Or maybe they don't know about. But someone at the table is up for 2 Grammys.
Really?
Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Andrew Sheps.
What is the story? It's albums of the year or something?
Yeah, 2 nominees in album of the year for Chili Peppers and also for Justin Timberlake.
My odds have gone up.
Well, that's great. Wow.
So this is a very nominated podcast.
It is. Wow. Yeah, all great. Of a sudden. And so you guys were wondering why I got the Fiji water.
Yeah, that's right. We got the good stuff.
You know, no more
sponsored sparkles. By Fiji.
So can I borrow your tux?
Wow, that's great. That's great.
Yeah, that's really great.
Yeah,
2 good records too. Good.
I know.
Really good.
Really good. Especially the Chili Peppers. That's awesome. That's a great record.
Just dissing Justin. Yeah. You know.
No, it's his personal taste, isn't it, Mike? That's all. Yeah.
Okay. It's. We're just going to
– yeah.
We'll put an edit right there too. Well, that's great. Congratulations, Andrew.
Thanks,
and
great.
We will keep our our fingers crossed, and if realize that if both you guys do win,
they will not turn up again to this podcast.
That's right. We've seen the last of them.
We want more money.
We'll be drunk.
We'll reserves, but we'll have people that we send.
Your peeps. Huh?
That's right.
Andrew would say. Andrew says. Bob says.
That's right.
You know what, guys? We should stop coming more often because these guys have been busy. And
yeah, that's true. Have. The ones who don't show up for the podcast are busy doing the work.
I know. And getting nominated.
Funny how that works.
Well, my mom liked the last thing I worked on.
Maybe you'll win a potty. Are there podcast awards?
Probably a potty. That'd be great.
That would be a great award.
Talking of awards, have you ever been over to Paige's house? Just go into his office real quickly. He's got like
a lot of bling.
And they're not my awards, actually. And every studio I went to, I lifted the odd one.
That's one way to get them.
Yeah. Very good thief.
Well, hey, listen, there's a couple things I wanted to get through today.
You got about 3 minutes left.
I know, really. First of all, I was...
Is that supposed to be in record, no?
You have to understand we're flying without a net, ladies and gentlemen. We have no engineers. So literally, we had to hit record and run over to the microphone.
And it was really tough because it's Pro Tools. And
he had to get one in.
He had to get one in. Just keep checking it's in record.
Well, this past weekend, I was in Baltimore, and... I went to a stage play over at the Center Stage Theater, which Baltimore has a really great civic theater there. And while I was there, I was talking with some of the sound people there, and I found out something really interesting. Number one, they call the people who do the sound the sound designers. Are you guys familiar with sound designers in the world of the theater?
Mm-hmm.
They're called sound designers.
Yeah.
Right? They come in and they set the levels or whatever, but they don't actually mix the show.
They design the sound system of how it's going to be, how the mics are going to be, where the speakers are going to be, what kind of mixer.
And so that's the whole thing. I didn't quite understand how that worked. Why don't they do that in-house as opposed to hiring somebody from the outside?
Well, every major Broadway show conceptually is built for that theater. It's not like there's no house system. So when you're doing, you know, where you've got multiple speaker locations and is it 5-1 and there's delay systems and this, yeah, it's somebody designs the, it's in a hardware design, not a.
When they do sound design, they design everything from the microphones, the mix levels, the whole shebang.
And the sound effects, you know, but sound effects is like three of them, you know.
Yeah, there wasn't really any sound effects in this. I was just the whole concept of the sound designer, a guy coming in, doing design of the sound, but
like
then not mixing
tech,
it.
But basically like a system tech, no?
I don't know. They're all marqueed and they have their own little, you know, credit in the program, the whole thing. And
there's three types of sound designers. You got sound design for theater, sound design for music, and then sound design for TV, film, you know, effects, sound designers.
Huh.
There's three types.
Well, all I know is every time there was a feedback in a microphone or something, I'd whisper to my friend, sound design.
It's Scott's problem.
No, but it was really great to see just the live theater and all the problems that they have with their – well, it wasn't great, but it was really –
It's great to hear the problems and know it's not your fault.
But it was really, really interesting to see all the behind the scenes and sound for theaters. I mean, that's just – to me, all the open mics. The thing about doing theater sound is just having all your mutes on cue, because when they run off stage, you got to mute the mic and get the new mic coming in.
One of the most amazing sound design for theater, that reason why I know, is I'm good friends with a gentleman named Francois, who did all the
sound.
All the sound design for Cirque. Francois. No.
A French guy.
No, he does all the sound design for Cirque, at Cirque du Soleil, and he's got 24 speaker locations. So he's mixing that. I mean, it's a wild setup.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty artistry.
Well, I'd like to find out some more. So if anybody out there knows a good resource to find out some good information on doing sound for theaters, send me an email, because it was pretty fascinating just to see how they had all the scenes set up and all the mutes. I tell you, it's all mutant. You know, once you get all the levels, it's just going from scene to scene, mutant mics. And what was even more amazing is there was action on the stage, and they would have to mute during the action, because if like a character grabs someone's face and you know they're grabbing that microphone, you know, just muting it, keeping it quiet, unmuting it when they're doing the dialogue. So it was pretty amazing. So anyhow, that was my big weekend. But this is our last show of the year, and it got me thinking of a couple things that I wanted to bring up to you guys before we go into our little hiatus for the year. And one is as a retrospective of this past year, I want to ask each one of you, were there any big changes for you concerning audio this past year? Or what was the biggest change for you concerning audio this past year? And I'll just start it for myself. This year is when I really started buying music online. I've been buying a lot from iTunes, and now that Tower Records, which was one of my favorite record stores, is no longer in existence, I've really concentrated more on buying music online. And quite frankly, I've been really enjoying the experience by doing all the previews and finding music that would take me forever in a record store to find. Just anybody. Any big changes in how they deal with audio, or maybe it's a piece of gear that changed your approach, or anything this past year that's had a big effect on you?
I've got two things, but that's kind of one's pretty silly. I decided to my live room in my studio, decided to change it all and put hardwood floors down, and I made this very cool little thing. Everybody uses it, but it's kind of using my hands. It doesn't really come out on a bipod, on a podcast. But either way, it's a reflective wall that I can change. And it basically looks like a louver kind of thing. And it's built in such a way that it's off angle. So I can actually make it do that, go flat, or go like that. And then I've got a sliding kind of veneer behind it, which is either wood on one side or carpet on the other. So I've got this live room, but at really in 15 minutes I can put down the carpets and deaden it all down and do like intimate vocals. So that was one of my big things this year. There's nothing really, no audio in it other than it's just a nice recording thing. And it's really made me so much happier just recording stuff. I just like, now all of a sudden I just want to record, you know, more live stuff than I did before, although I always liked it, but...
I mean, interesting, didn't you, Bobby? You also recorded a lot of drums in a very large studio.
I did, yeah.
And then you went back home and did some more drums in your smaller room.
And it really compared. Yeah. It really, really did. And I did on a 9K, a nice SSL. I loved SSLs for some things. And it was a 9000, and it's a nice sounding console, that is, for recording. But, you know, I went back home and I put it on my very... a modified analog console in my little room, and I was really impressed with the sound of it.
So you get more reflective waves? Is that basically
less? Just
control.
More control, just more of a dispersed sort of thing. I've got one side of the room is completely dead, and one side's completely variable. So I could be completely dead all around, or completely live. It's very, very nice, and it's just very flexible for kind of like a small studio like mine that has just two rooms. That's, you know, I've got to make the room either be dead or you know. So,
you know, but that's pretty important, because there's a lot of people that are recording, you know, at their house or in their garage.
Right, that's exactly right.
And generally, when you have people that are new to recording or start recording, the first thing they do is they build a room and they just make it dead.
Out of it, right?
You walk in there and it's just like worst. You can hear the air just getting sucked out. So,
exactly.
So it's really great that, you know, you did that, and you know, to tell people that it's okay, you know, to work with the room.
It was such a blessing. I meant to do it when I built the room originally, but I ran out of money, so I was like, I don't want to spend the extra money. But now I said, let me go for a little
bit. Now you're rich.
Yeah, now I'm loaded, because I'm actually in between doing music. I'm actually like more or less professional soccer player, aren't I?
Well, I will tell you that this past year, when you worked on the acoustics over in Everett Martin's room, you really taught me a lot about...
I haven't worked since.
He can't bring himself to go in the room. Played the track and it's still ringing.
Oh, it's
there's no way to follow that, Mike.
No, but you really taught me a lot about working with the acoustics of a room.
Yeah,
not trying to fight the room, but to actually work with the acoustics on the room.
Yeah, and did you do it only on one wall or both walls?
On one, the big wall, the biggest wall that everybody faces, kind of sort of.
Right.
Well, not kind of sort of, that everybody faces. It's basically a wall that varies. You know, it's just like I can turn it, make it completely, completely flat, 100% flat. right. or angles.
Diffuse it or absorb it.
It's very nice. Really, right. really great.
Have you yet, Bobby, sort of tested it out and listened to all the different variables?
A little bit, but not. Yeah. There's so many that, you know, I actually played around with it with my mate with the saxophone came over and he played some stuff and he said, man, this is really lovely. I love playing against this part of it. And I turned around and he said, oh, man, there's much more I can hear. So yeah. It was a really nice thing. A
lot of learning there. Yeah. And
what kind of wood did you use?
Hard, it's kind of a hard sort of...
A maple?
You know, the guy that built it. Yeah, I think it was a maple. You're absolutely right. I think it was a maple. It was quite hard. But the nice thing is that they're miking it. You know, because, you know, obviously the old trick of sticking a mic against something reflective is pretty nice. You stick it against it and just change the angles. You go, oh, that sounds different. Especially if you've got, you know, it's a small room. It's 18 feet or so. I stick a drum over there and I put the mic there and I change this. And it's really a nice little effect. So cool. It's kind of like my sexiest audio change in my life this year.
And it, right. and it got you an Emmy nomination.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah exactly. And it was all MIDI, that was.
So yeah. anybody else have a really good audio breakthrough this past year?
Audio breakthrough?
Anybody.
Breakthrough.
Well, not even a breakthrough.
I think the biggest thing for us is on two fronts is, and it's actually a little more than a year, but it's really been pretty prolific in the last 18 months, and that is we have location-based recorders that can do 2496 that run off of batteries. So what that basically means is taking our multi-terabyte library, which was all recorded at either Nagras or 4816, and rethinking about going out and recording everything all over again. So it's like the difference between – you know, HD and not HD. So right now we are starting to do multi-channel mics and, you know, 5.1 mic setups and we're now starting to travel the world to get all the cool stuff that we've had in the past at higher resolutions. And you put it straight into Pro Tools and it's great and it's fast. And then the other front, so that's kind of the movie sound effects front. And on the other side, with PlayStation 3, and Xbox 360 coming out, the whole technical paradigm has totally changed. And, you know, before it used to be, you know, 22K, 8-bit or 16-bit. Right. And now we're talking about hundreds of streams of audio, and the way we approach music is different because now we can have 8 channels of music that can create interactive scores. And, I mean, the whole paradigm shift is huge, and it's only going to become more prolific in 2007.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
Paradigm, I'm still trying.
Hey, you know,
I thought it was a live console. Oh, no.
Just on a little sidebar, I had a question that we didn't get to ask you from last week. And one of the listeners emailed me and wanted me to ask you if when you record sound effects, if you record mono or stereo.
As if those are the only two options.
Actually, well, yeah, I was going to say mono, stereo, or.
I don't know. I guess he's doing some sound effects recordings and, you know, practical stuff.
When we go out and record, we usually go out with 4 people, and each of those 4 people have 2 to 4 mics each. So we use stereo shotguns. We use omnis. We use cardioids. X, Y, O, R, T, F, you name the formats. It really depends on what I'm recording. If I'm recording cars, a lot of times I'm doing mono. If I'm recording ambiences, I'm in 5.0. If I'm, you know, doing explosions and guns, like I said, we did a gun shoot. We used 12 mics. So, yes.
You kept shooting them.
You know, it just really depends on the situation.
Like if you were going to record like toasters and it was, you know, for some guy's independent film that he's doing.
Well, no, if I want to create intimacy – and it depends on the format. If I'm doing film, I'm going to do it mono because you got to remember my stereo field is, 40 feet wide?
Right.
So, you know, if you want a toaster, it's now a 40-foot toaster if you do it in stereo. What we're starting to do a lot lately is LCR recordings. So this way I can use the stereo side. I can use the center side. I have all these choices. Wow. I can pitch down. I can delay the left and right. It's a whole new way of thinking. That's what I'm saying. I guess mono is great. Like in gaming, mono, because in a game you want to be able to move around an environment, and the only way to tell that you're moving around an environment is if a mono sound keeps moving around in a 5.1 environment.
Right.
and that includes dialogue and music. You know, I don't know. I mean, even stereo music in film doesn't necessarily make sense. You need to do an LCR because, again, you lose the center, so you don't have a phantom center. Mm. So you've got to create that whole the sound across the screen. So I guess the long answer to this is whatever seems to make sense for what you're recording.
I'd also add to that, if you're building a sound effects library, it's important to, if a sound is a mono sound, keep it as a mono file and try to have your files as small as makes sense. You know, a lot of times you go through a sound effects library and you listen to a CD, say, and the CD will be in mono. If you look at it on a Phascope, it's mono. So the tendency would be to bring it into Pro Tools or whatever you're using to bring in that sound on a stereo track because it's coming off a stereo CD. But the truth is it's much better to build your library with mono files for mono sounds, stereo files for stereo sounds, and multi-channel files for multi-channel sounds. That'll help you make sense out of things later. So if you're recording a toaster, say, and really you just need a little source toaster sound, you know, for the background in a film, record it in mono because you're probably going to use it in mono and make sure it's a mono file, not a stereo file with the same information on both sides.
Or the best way to cover your ass 10 different ways is to go MS, where you've got basically you get rid of the sides, you've got a mono sound. If you want, you decode it, all of a sudden you're stereo, so when you do it MS, you actually get both at the same time.
Yeah, that's a great format because it would collapse so well, too.
Yeah, so, you know.
Why don't you explain what MS is really quick?
MS stands for mid-side, and what basically you're doing is you've got a mic down the center, which is usually a cardioid, and then you've got a figure eight going off side to side, and basically you flip the phase on one of the channels to the other side, and you're able to get a stereo just because of the way ribbon mic or figure eight mics work. Then when you flip the phase, you're going to get the other side of the channel, and then you combine the two, and you get MS. But you have to decode it.
But you can control the stereo width after the fact.
Correct.
That's the great part about
things,
it.
Yeah.
Because you've recorded those two mics separately. One of them is only the mono information. One of them is only the side information, and depending on how you blend it.
And by flipping the
and
phase.
And there are plugins to do the encoding and decoding available for everything for free. Mm-hmm. So
and that's
you
also,
can mess with it yourself easily.
It's a great trick, just by the way, when I was learning to mix. Whenever I wanted to try and work out what the guy was doing, I used to take the left side or the right side and flip it out of phase and then mono it, so you'd hear the sum and difference, and you'd hear just like, you know, the background vocals or just the delays. Like, oh, he's putting a delay on there. It's the sort of thing. It's kind of the same concept.
You know what's also trippy? I'm going to give a little secret here. Take a normal stereo mix, if you ever want to go 5.1, and decode it. That means all the material that's exactly the exact same in left and right. Actually, I'm sorry, Dolby decoding it. Because what you're going to do is all of a sudden it's going to go down the center and everything goes stereo, and it gives you an automatic LCR on any kind of sound.
Wow.
So you can take a normal sound and decode it.
Ooh. Well, that's a good hint.
Choruses and effects sometimes freak it out. You just get that sort of thing. It keeps jumping off to the left or something. You have like a bass or bass guitar.
Yeah.
Or has chorus on it. It keeps nipping off to the left or right slightly.
All right. Well, let's get back to the this past year. Andrew, do you have anything? Anything that you've – any piece of gear?
Yeah. I wouldn't even say a piece of gear specifically, but I've – and it sounds ridiculous. I've just sort of rediscovered analog stuff.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, I've always used it, you know, because obviously with microphones and my recording chains have always stayed very, very analog. But because of budgets, I've been mixing a lot in Pro Tools. And if you're going to mix in Pro Tools, then you want to be recallable. So I'm using plugins and things. And then starting with the Chili Peppers record, I was mixing on a large analog console, a Neve, an old Neve. And they're just great. And so I've spent the years sort of trying to find ways on even on the low budget stuff to use more and more analog gear as part of the process. And I think it's good. I mean, it's inspiring me to really work on mixes better and blah, blah, blah.
And it really does. The mixes just have much more character.
And it carries over too because we did this experiment with my kids where I brought out a bunch of records that I also had on CD and brought them out to the studio. And we did A/B comparisons and just, which do you like better? And they picked the vinyl on every single record.
Yeah, baby.
So we got a turntable for the house, and we've been going to Amoeba and buying up a bunch of used vinyl because it's so cheap. And so kind of all the way around, there's been a lot of analog stuff.
What about you, Martin? Any
You know, I haven't had any sort of, miracle changes in the way I've been working or anything. I think that I'm going to echo really what Bobby and Andrew have said. For me, it's been more about recording ambience. And, I've been using guitars much more. So just recording a Vox amp. And because I have a Pro Tools set up, and recording acoustic guitars has been something that I've enjoyed doing this year. You know, instead of just staying totally in the digital realm, of just using all the plugins, I've enjoyed putting microphones into my adjacent room and putting a couple of old Vox amps up and pulling the guitars out. And also, I found a nice little sort of loop station for guitars, which meant I could just play a riff and keep looping it and then, you know, work around that to build a song. So for me, if anything that's been a little different this year has been after I learnt the vibe of Pro Tools, I found myself moving more into the live recording. Once I understood Pro Tools to a certain degree, I've been trying to get the sound of a room, the sound of noise onto the tapes, onto the hard disk. So for me, it's been more about surrounding myself with guitars and amplifiers.
Well, I think another thing for you, though, has to be the fact that you're...
Had a sex change? Well, that did make me listen differently.
Actually, he looks good for a man.
I like higher registers, higher keys.
And red dresses.
Wow.
Will that be edited out, Mike? Probably not.
No, because I thought you just wanted to keep that a secret. But,
I thought that's why you didn't pay for the voice part.
Just with your hand on my knee, I just thought I might bring this up.
It is Christmas after.
No, but I was going to Wow.
How did you get out of that, Marky boy?
One thing I want to just say is, how come this is a dry iPod? You know what I'm saying? It's Christmas. You should add like a big old bottle of something.
Whiskey.
Yeah.
Bobby, I just couldn't even imagine you with a big old bottle of something.
You already had one before he came in.
That's what, no, what I was going to say, Martin, though, is one big change there is just the fact that you're going to be putting out your own album. That decision came down this year. You know?
Yeah, I suppose it did, Mike, really. I've been on it for quite a while, so that doesn't seem so fresh to me. But, in the new year, I'll be putting an independent record out. So that's really what I've been working on the last year. So, and in fact, a lot of the recent overdubs on this album were much more live playing. So, you're right. This is going to be an exciting start.
Yeah, especially from the fact that, you know, just going through your catalog and, you know, I remember when you were just kind of weighing that whole decision, and then when you decided to pull the trigger, I mean, I think it's been a pretty exciting journey, and there's still more to come.
Well, I have to thank you for that, for moving me, into the Pro Tools domain, because like most of us here, I loved my analog studio, and I was one of the last people to move across. But I did find that once I was in the Pro Tools domain, I was able to transfer a lot of stuff that I, you know, from the past, and work on it again with a fresh point of view, and I have found Pro Tools and the digital domain to be very exciting that way, that you can move in some old demos. And in fact, we were talking about it before the podcast, that if you listen to the new Beatles record, Love, the album that was recently been done by George Martin and his son, it's a tremendous example of how to use Pro Tools and the digital world well with old analog tapes, because there's some incredible mixtures of songs being blended together that you wouldn't have been able to do in the past. You'll hear guitar solos from, you know, Revolution by the Beatles being inlaid into Octopus's Garden, and they've been able to time stretch some of these keys and the time tempos, and they've done it in such a great artistic way. You still feel the deepness and the depth of the early analog recordings, and these were early 4-track and 2-track recordings, which have now been sort of, you know, put into different worlds and domains. And I think that's what I'm doing by bringing some of my old material up to date. That's what I've loved about the Pro Tools setup.
Well, Rob, how about mm-hmm. you?
Oh, am I still here?
You are.
I thought I had left.
Wake up.
Oh, sorry. I would say there were two big decisions this year that kind of affected my audio world. One of them is I've always had a lot of computers that had a lot of libraries on them. I have terabytes of Kontakt sounds and Giga Studio sounds and Halion sounds and just hundreds of thousands of loops and drum samples and all that kind of stuff. And they were all scattered around different
computers in the studio, and it started to become a nightmare to try to figure out where things were and to spread resources around so that I wouldn't run out of voices on any one computer at a time. And what I did this year, I finally decided to build a server to host all of these sounds. And now I have it so all the computers in the studio, there's more than a dozen computers that now play sounds off the central server. So if I'm running Kontakt or Battery or any of these programs, they can be streaming those files that they need over the network, and I only need to maintain one copy of the library, and I only have to back up one copy. So it's terabytes of data, but I have every single sound that I've ever owned on one central server. So if I happen to be upstairs and I need to browse my loop library to see if I have a certain kind of loop, any terminal in the house can do it. And I can do it from the outside also. So if I'm on vacation or something and I want to hear something from my library, it's all accessible on the web.
And if you'd like to hear Rob's library, go to.
You will not.
If you'd like to steal some of
this. Yes. It's a few terabytes of stuff, but.
And a password.
You're not going to find out my IP address on this podcast.
162.1.
No, it's all reasonably well hidden. But the idea was it's very secure.
Wow.
And it's fast enough that if I'm loading, say, some GigaStudio sounds, off the server and just playing them on my main Cubase machine running Kontakt, it works absolutely as easily as if the sounds were on that machine. It's coming over gigabit.
You're not having voice problems?
Never. And it's coming over gigabit Ethernet. And, I mean, I haven't tried to kill it, but for any kind of practical work I'm doing, I've had no problems.
It's like BFD, Ivory, Kontakt?
No, the proprietary things like BFD I haven't tried because they require – so much speed. I'm doing it with things like loop libraries, drum libraries. I literally have 100,000 kick drums and 100,000 snare drums, and I have them all categorized by.
And you like Bank One Program One, right?
Well, I've used Bank One Program One a lot. I will say that.
The 909, the best.
Yeah, that's right. Well, so that central library idea was something that was a huge change for me this year. But the other huge change this year was that. We started doing more long-form mixing at my place. We've mixed a couple films in the studio now, which basically I've used some of this library technology because my sound effects are on the central server, some of them also. But so I made the decision halfway through the year that it might be fun to go from a lot of short-form work, because I've been doing a lot of commercials and short music projects, to try something more long-form. And that's why we mixed a documentary during the summer, and we're mixing an independent film now. And it's actually a lot of fun, and it's something we were always set up technically for.
Right.
But it forced me to get a nice screen for the front of the studio and get all the 5.1 and 6.1 stuff.
By the way, did you get your screen mounted with that?
It's on its way. It was mounted, then unmounted. That's a story for next year, is how to mount a friggin' LCD screen without destroying a very expensive fabric wall, which is what I'm in the middle of right now.
Wow. Well, hey, listen, we're going to take a break now, but, it sounds like everybody had at least some big thing that happened to them this past year.
Well, we had a whole year. Something had to happen.
That's right. Couple nominations.
Yeah.
But, and except for me, where I just went and bought from iTunes, but that's okay. There's always next year.
An interesting bit of news came out today talking about iTunes. It said the download and revenue stream from downloading is down 63%.
It's down?
Yeah, they said it's down. And actually, you know what? This is what we're going to start the second half with.
What went up?
No, you know what went up is people humming to themselves.
We're going to start the second half with this because that's
I say let's keep going.
Let's keep going.
Go, go, jump, 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 jump.
There's a big old edit there.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Gary Glitter.
We'll see you on the other side.
Well, you got some work ahead of you.
Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
You notice how more out of control it is at the moment.
Summerfield is amongst us.
Oh,
that's right.
Yeah.
We miss that.
Hey.
Before
we're like, hi.
Yeah,
I know.
Missing Bobby. Missing Bobby.
Oh, I feel loved.
Okay, here we go. Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And Bobby, you were mentioning something before we took the break about Apple and iTunes and the, what is it, Nielsen Research?
Forrester Research.
Forrester.
Came out with a research saying that iTunes download based on only a small amount of people they surveyed, but basically I think 3,000.
Right, 3,000.
3,000 people or something like that, that the downloads have dropped by 59% plus 17%, so it was about an average of 63% compared to the same time a year ago. And that's pretty astonishing considering that, you know, Zune, I think, is the Microsoft equivalent.
Right.
And there are lots of other download sites. But it's kind of strange that all of a sudden it would drop off, you know, drop off.
Didn't they sample people over 72 years old or something, though?
No,
there was people that had died.
I was wondering, with millions of people downloading of all different ages and demographics, they figured out all of that by 3,000 people.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like a big enough sample.
I mean, because it makes me where and
well, but what does Apple say their revenue is?
Well, you see, the thing is, Apple doesn't their financials, and I've looked at it. It doesn't say what their margin is on their downloads.
Well, I know what their margin is. They get the artist gets 65%. 65 cents for every song. Apple keeps 35 cents for every song.
Right, but cost to market?
Well, that's the thing.
That's hard. And, you know, absolutely.
Although I did read that Apple came out today and they basically refuted that and said, no, we're going well. And as a matter of fact, we're expanding.
Well,
and,
it could be that they managed to find these people because they downloaded a lot. But it's like with any new format, you know, you get your library together in a huge chunk and then you add piecemeal. Right. You know, with CDs, I mean, the first couple of years CDs were out, I was replacing all my vinyl, which I'm backtracking on now. But, you know, and
that's
then
right. Wait, you're going back to vinyl.
My buying dropped off.
Completely.
A lot.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Interesting thing as well, there's a crack as well, a bit of software that allows you to rip and distribute iTunes tracks now, which is kind of scary.
It is scary, especially for artists that are going to be releasing CDs.
Anybody,
coming up.
He looks at Pagey.
I'm frowning.
The good news? 12 million people are listening to it. Bad news? You've sold 3.
Yeah, good number one on downloads.
Good
sold
promotion.
One in China.
Yeah, because, well, you brought up the good point, though, is if people are not downloading, I mean, what's going to take its place? I mean, there is certainly not CDs, because you got record
stores
going off.
Well, they're not paying for downloads.
That's the problem.
No, I don't believe the majority of people are
unless they're just fed up with the music. They're like, okay, literally. But I mean, maybe they're just like, okay, well, I've got all that. I've got enough of that. They've topped up their catalog. They've got all their classics and their oldies and their memorabilia stuff. And now they're like, okay, I mean, I don't know.
I think there could be a good point in what we were just joking about there, though, that unless the material is worthy, you're going to find a lot of people may lay off for a while and just say, as Andrew said, I've downloaded a lot of stuff and everything's sounding the same. There's nothing that's, you know, getting that I really want. And I think that's a real thing that you could be aware of, like anything in life. If there's a bland period appears.
I'd hope that was the case.
Demographics is huge.
I think that began the downturn in CD sales as well, is because there was just a bunch of crap.
I firmly
believe that was
a huge
factor.
But they find
it wasn't even that good.
But you find a lot of the CDs now, they're not selling to the kids. They're selling to people our age. You know, the 80 and up. Sorry. But they're selling to our age where, you know, all of a sudden you're seeing a lot of Led Zeppelin. Yeah. You're starting to see a lot of albums that we grew up on and bands we grew up on. And yeah, they still have the new stuff, but it's not as much.
Yeah. You know, it would be very interesting to see what is downloading. Well,
yeah,
you know, if it was like, you know, U2's
High School Musical,
you know,
Disney,
that, you know, their top 18 singles, or what is downloading well.
Well,
still,
if you go to iTunes, you can can always see that. Mm-hmm. Word Al.
Yeah, but I mean, you're going to still see the certain charts staying the same. But how real is that? You know, I mean, if the downloads are getting lower, that still means the same songs could still be staying in the top 10 or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just what is downloading the most, you know, over a consistent period
of time.
It's
funny that all these records, I mean, the charts are what they are, which is whatever's selling. But the majority of people, of course, I suppose I'm talking of our age group, so we're the old fogies now. But even so, though, actually, I'll take that back, because some of the younger people I talk to, they say, oh, the music today is crap. They don't like it. They're listening to 80s stuff, which...
Well, look at how many remixes are coming out, you know? I mean, and granted, the remixes, I'm not bagging on them because some of them are pretty brilliant. Still, the fact that you're remixing, you know, hits from the 80s, you know, like SOS with, you know, Tainted Love and things like that. I mean, it's a good song and the remix is pretty good, but still, you almost wish if that energy went out.
It's a good remake, yeah.
Yeah, you almost wish that would have gone into something new, that kind of energy.
There are a lot of bands. I mean, I don't know more in the pop field, I guess, but more in the rock field. The bands are not influenced by; they are ripping off.
Right.
Where I think, I mean, and maybe it's on purpose, and maybe it isn't. But basically, they seem to hope that the listeners haven't heard the original because they're basically playing the same songs. As opposed to being influenced and amalgamating it, and I think it's because the stuff is coming back so much quicker now. I mean, we went from the 60s all the way up to the 80s in rock in about 4 years, it seems.
But do you also think, though, that some of it's the musicianship, where before you had to really be a great musician, whether it was just portraying an emotion through an instrument or being technically efficient, and now it's like you don't really have to do that.
Well, I mean, you know, with the advent of MTV, obviously looks became very important, and that began the trend towards the full package of the artist as opposed to, well, we just listen to the music, because most people before MTV were never seen except on an album cover. Nobody knew what they looked like, and nobody cared.
Right.
But and that has just gone forward to encompass sort of everything except the music. You have to look good, speak well, dress well, be willing to do this, that, and the other thing. And at the same time, with Pro Tools and all the digital stuff, the musicianship is much less important. And bands are now, I mean, the Monkees are, you know, supposedly a cast band, but those guys could actually play. I mean, I think you'd have to go to the Archies to find a band that really didn't exist, you know, and that was made
sugar,
up.
The Archies didn't exist?
No, it was all
that's broke my
everything.
Heart. That's broke my heart.
Me too, I'm ruined.
Oh man. I got pictures of them on my wall. I mean, goodness sake.
But that's a pretty common thing now, where you hear about a band and then you talk to some of the people who made the record, and maybe one of those guys was actually in the studio when it happened.
But it is down to dollars and cents. It's just the commerce of it all. It's they just want marketable stuff right now.
It's a vicious circle, because they want marketable stuff, and so they put out all this just weak stuff and they shove it down people's throats, and then people don't respond, and they're saying, hey, why aren't they responding? It's just, you know, it just.
And they've been very conveniently able to blame it on downloads, which obviously are taking a piece. You know, you can't say that the people pirating music doesn't impact it, but
absolutely,
it lets all of the people sort of responsible for the product say, well, it's not us.
I think the impact is a lot less than what they say it is.
Yeah.
Because I think in some ways it can also expose people to and I don't condone pirating, but it can also expose people to artists that they may not have ever even, you know, realized, and then they go out and buy an album, you know? I mean, how many times have you, you know, got a cassette from somebody and, hey, listen to this, and you like it, and you go buy the
cassette?
Album? This was when back before they had downloads.
Eight tracks.
I've still got my vinyls. I've got pictures of cassettes.
But do you also
home
think
taping is killing music? Remember that?
Yeah. Don't you think rock, though, and a lot of music in general was all about nonconformism, and now it's all about conformism, because then now they want to be able to go, this song will be guaranteed to sell because all these people would like it. But before it was more about,
they got people
screw everybody. I don't want to be like everybody. And that's what the younger and
well, even if it, even if it wasn't about that specifically, it was at least about something.
Well, yeah. But that comes around, though, because the whole cycle of the record labels is coming around again.
But disco, I guess, was that.
5 years ago, you'd be hard-pressed to find a lot of independent labels doing really well. There were always a couple that hung around. But as an independent got successful, a major label would buy them up, and everybody came into the middle. And now the indie labels are the ones breaking everything
with rock. It's a funny thing, though. It's a cultural change, because, you know, unfortunately, America technically is at war, right? And there's a war going on, and people have died and all that. But in 1974, or whenever there was the last Vietnam War that the U.S. was really involved in, all the songs, it was just like rebel songs, you know, people making statements, musical statements, bands standing. And all I hear now is, yo, baby, someone's dead.
Neil Young,
like, what's going on?
Put out a protest record, and
that was it. I mean, I know, actually, it was the Country Guys did one.
Yeah, but we're living in a very PC climate right now.
You know what, though? I have to talk about this. The best new artist last year was John Legend. That's who won last year for best new artist. And this year, his follow-up single, the first single from his new album, was a song called Save Room for My Love, which is basically just a cover of the old song Stormy. Remember that song? Mm-hmm. But with different lyrics in the verse and a different chorus. And I talked to a lot of young people who heard this who didn't know the original Stormy song, and then I would play them the original Stormy song to realize that this is not, it's not really a cover because it's different lyrics and the chorus is different. But to these kids, they would compare the original Stormy, which was a huge hit, and this new John Legend song, and they'd compare them as equals, as if, okay, well, this old group in the 60s did it, and now John Legend did it, and they have equal merit, and I'm not sure which one I like more or less. And that just showed me how sort of strange the perspective of all this stuff is. Because here is now a new version of an old song that isn't as good as the old one. The chorus isn't as catchy. The production is obviously better, and, you know, it sounds a lot better than the original Stormy did. But it's pretty much just a knockoff of it, but it gets elevated as something cool and new and hip. And John Legend is obviously a talented guy, and the people around him are really talented. And if the energy that went into doing this good sort of knockoff remake had gone into writing some real original new stuff,
it's a lot easier to rearrange someone's song.
Yeah, but I mean, his first album had
a new great song,
but he's proven he can write great stuff. It was a really weird disconnect, especially if you're just coming off winning the Best New Artist Grammy. Yeah.
That's true.
I just think the expectation should be a little bit higher than that as a follow-up.
Do you think, though, that is the artist saying, I got an idea, or someone saying to him going, you know what you really need to do?
Well, it's hard to know.
Yeah.
It's hard to know.
But something's happening in the film where you look at the best films that are most interesting are all independent. Yeah. And all of the, hey, we're going to take the latest female actress and the male actress, suck them into a romantic comedy or something.
And do a sequel.
And do a remake. You go, whatever, I hate this. And then somebody comes out with a film with nobody you know, and it's brilliant. It's
like,
amazing.
Why remake, what was it, Fun with Dick and Jane? I mean, I just didn't get that one at all, you know? That was a remake with, to me, that just didn't make that much sense.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I had someone explain that to me, and I thought it was fascinating. And that is because, you know, even like Poseidon Adventure, and I know it didn't do as well, but I was asking about it, I said, well, why, you know, what's the concept behind remaking that movie? They said, it's great. You saw it as a kid, and the actors made sense and were relevant at your time. But now there's a whole multiple generations of people who never saw it. If they saw the old one, it wouldn't have any relevance because the actors don't mean anything. So the concept was on some of the remakes – is to remake it back with the relevance of the latest actors. I think it really comes down to, do they make it well or do they not make it well, or does the audience want to see it at all?
Yeah, I mean, because that makes no sense to me, because the Poseidon Adventure is what made the actors relevant. You know,
No. When it came out a long time ago, they were all stars. I mean, it was like, you know, that was the time where the disaster films, Towering Inferno, Poseidon Adventure, Airplane, Earthquake. And it was like all of the big stars, you know. It's like Ocean's 11 now.
But is that the only reason anyone liked the movie? I mean,
no. I think the problem was, in my opinion, is that there was a genre of films, which were the disaster films.
Right.
And everyone was into it, and it was kind of the thing of the day, and everyone was finding, you know, the latest, greatest disaster film. And to throw a disaster film out by itself, everyone went, heh.
Well,
you know,
that and the fact that, come on, we all knew how it was going to end. You know, there was going to be a small group.
Yeah, but your kids didn't.
My kids didn't see that film.
Well, but everybody under 20 or under even 30 didn't know the story of the film.
I understand the concept, but at the end of the day, especially with movies, I mean, it's much harder to get a bad movie across than it is a bad record.
Yeah,
it's impossible. 10 minutes in, you leave.
Right.
Although, you know, I will say that then, you know, not all is doom and gloom with records, because I picked up My Chemical Romance. Have you heard that album? They have a great concept album, and that's just something
interesting
that in today's market, with it's so single driven, it's really refreshing to get an album that reminds you of, like, you know, like the great like Styx, Grand Illusion, where you hear the whole album, you know, that type of a vibe. And I think that's one of the things that can actually save music, is if people do more things like that, where they use music to as an art form and not just these singles that are going out.
But the thing is, now also the bands and the acts need to do it for themselves, because the labels are not going to develop them the way they used to. And there are definitely still talented people out there, but it's basically they need to do a lot of the heavy lifting as far as coming up with the great albums and writing the great songs.
To be artists.
But isn't that where it started from, and, you know, the 50s?
Yeah, but there was there was definitely a giant machine that if you were talented, the machine would help you.
If you made it by your sixth record, you'd probably get dropped. But the first two were, you know, if they were throwaways, they were throwaways. It was okay. Because they trusted their decision to sign you in the first place.
Right.
Because they're building catalog. I mean, it was the same time when the labels were making so much money on catalog. It was ridiculous. And they realized, well, we've got to build catalog.
You know, it's pretty amazing. If you pick up a book, the book that's out there called Hotel California, it talks a lot about what we were just talking about there with artists like the Eagles, like Joni Mitchell, Jackson Browne. They signed them for like five albums. The first two were like, let's just build you and just see how you go and see if one song can touch people. But, and also there wasn't even about singles then. It was about, we have a special artist here. You're just not going to find that now. You've got a hit straight away, right out the box.
Yeah, that's the only chance.
With one song, not with one song.
And it's understandable. You know? I mean, it's not sustainable for that amount of time, but.
You know what? I want to put a plug out there for the documentary that I was talking about that we mixed earlier this year. Is called right. Before the Music Dies, mm-hmm. and it features a lot of big recording artists talking about this very thing. And Bonnie Raitt talks about that, how, you know, the label used to nurture the new acts, and the big acts would pay for the development of the small acts and all that stuff. So if you get a chance to check it out, it's called Before the Music Dies. And I know it's done because we finished it.
You think like bands like, you know, Little Feat and some of the people that have really made inroads to our sort of musical psyche. It's very difficult to allow that to happen now. It's very difficult for those bands that have influenced so many people with great, as you mentioned earlier, great musicianship. And, you know, it's very hard to see that happening now, you know, because bands like Little Feat, bands like The Band even, you know, with Robbie Robertson, I wonder if they'd get a chance to get heard now.
I think a lot of it has to do with, and something I've had been exposed to,
you know,
over the last couple of years, is public corporations. And it's a huge thing because, I mean, I'm seeing the decisions that these big corporations are making based on shareholder prices, which sometimes you go, well, why – things that have to do with businesses or not have to do anything with businesses, but strategies of playing with money. And I think that when you start looking at record companies, they're going, we spent X amount of money, we made X amount of money, this didn't make sense. It has nothing to do with the love of what you do or what you want to try to do. Definitely. It's just about – it's all become accounting. And sometimes saying, well, if we sell this company or do this company or acquire this company, the perceived value of this, or even with Disney, all of a sudden we're going to lay off all these people, boom, the shares go up. And everyone's like, yay, this is great. It's perceived ways of playing with money. But what's interesting is I think we're kind of missing the boat now. It's, what do you want to do? What do you want to create? And eventually, you know, it used to make a lot of money. So people, we want to be in that business. But now we're in the business, but we forgot about what business we're in.
To be fair, the labels were printing money in the 70s.
Yeah.
I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, that was...
Yeah, we all came along a little too late, didn't we?
Yeah.
Well, hey, listen, being that this is the end of the year show and we've now are thoroughly depressed by looking back at the music-wise, let's look forward. Let's look forward to the next year. And I want to ask you guys, what are your plans for the next year? Do you have any plans?
Get some sleep.
Audio-wise, are you going to try something new? Are you going to go a different direction in your production?
Definitely not.
I'm going to record everything in mono for the next year.
Yeah. Bobby and I will be polishing our awards.
Okay.
We'll be polishing each other's shoulders.
So let's start with you, Bobby. Any plans for the next year?
What I'm going to do next year?
Yeah, besides show up to more than four podcasts.
To change a little bit, not really technically, nothing. I'm actually going to get somebody to come and help me do a lot of stuff, editing and stuff like that. I need somebody to take a little bit of strain off of me doing the day-to-day stuff, so I can just concentrate on music more.
So send your applications to
Bobby. And do more live recording.
Well, that's great.
Do live recording, more live stuff, definitely, but even when it's not needed.
Andrew?
I hope just more of what I'm doing now. Yeah, I don't know, just a lot of mixing. Hoping to do a lot of mixing. There you go.
There we go.
You put that console to good use.
Absolutely. did you mention you did it? You got a new console? Did you mention that?
No, did we mention this last week?
It's worthy of mentioning.
I think you mentioned it last week.
Was it Mackie? Which Mackie was it?
Yeah, it's the old analog Mackie. Yeah.
The good sounding one.
Yeah. No. Put in a Neve 8068, a 32 class AB.
Nice.
But beautiful EQs and.
So your goal this year is to find out what that little button to the left does.
I think my goal is to start paying for it.
And the nice thing, you live about 2 miles away from me, I'm going to be nipping up going, do me a favor, just stick this through these channels.
Every time he leaves, like, how come I'm missing some EQ?
Rob, yes. Any plans this upcoming year?
Oh, I got plans. We're enjoying the long-form work we're doing on the films that we're working on. We're going to be continuing that because it's long-form, and they won't be done by the end of this year. So we'll be working on those at the beginning of next year. A few other things for next year. I'm actually going to be putting out a music library of a bunch of music we've been organizing for the past – that's been over a year, actually, putting this stuff together, a bunch of unsold demos and cues we've written – just in general. So my company, Noisy Neighbors, is going to have a music library next year, which we're excited about. I'm also launching a new company that I'll be able to talk about after we come back next year at some point. Can't go into it too much, but I'm trying to, after the years I've spent in the industry so far, I'm trying to figure out, it's been 21 years basically since I started with Stevie, and I've been really seriously going back and thinking about what have I enjoyed doing over the last 21 years and what have I not enjoyed and how can I change my business model to kind of focus more on the stuff that I really, really enjoy and less on the stuff that I don't.
Like the podcast, right?
I will still be here for the podcast. I do enjoy the podcast.
But we are moving the podcast. We're moving to Sherman Oaks.
Oh, lovely.
He lives there. You live there. I live there. True. He lives there. You don't. You've got to drive anyway, and you've got to drive anyway. Right? 2007.
So 2007 will be less driving.
It'll be in Jerry's Deli.
There you go. So next year is going to be a very strange year because I'm purposely trying to challenge myself. Although some things won't change, I'll still be doing a lot of commercials and movie stuff and records and all the usual stuff. But I am going to diversify a bit and bring in some more people to help me. Like Bobby, there's a bunch of things that I want to do that I just don't have enough time to do. And
it's piling up now. I've got to say, okay, just get somebody to sit in the corner and do this.
Yeah.
And send your applications.
Yeah, well, it will be that way next year, actually.
I guarantee you we're going to get emails.
That's fine. Of course, you won't be doing the fun stuff. The whole point is offloading the not fun stuff.
Scott.
I have no clue. Probably just the same old stuff. I mean, I'm looking at a whole lot of new technology in the gaming side, which is interesting in that front. There's so many zigs and zags that the whole industry is going through. The challenges that go with that, I think it's just kind of be more of the same. Mm. I know that's pretty boring.
No, but that's good.
Nothing wrong, I tell you.
Consistency. So, Martin, what are you? What kind of plans do you have next year?
I love to write songs. That's my thing. So I want to keep the energy up to keep writing better songs. I mean, it sounds, again, another bland answer, but, you know, you never really think that you've written your best song yet. So, I'm playing more, guitars, which I usually run on keyboard. So I'm enjoying that. And as you mentioned, Mike, I have an album coming out in the beginning of the year. So, and I hope to, in the middle of next year, put another one out, which I'm working on at the moment. So I have half of the next record ready as well. But for me, mainly, it's keeping the energy up at this stage to want to go into the studio to write a new song. And I think, you know, at my age, it's important to just keep that inspiration there. So I just want to keep loving writing songs.
And also, what about launching your website too, though? That'll be launched.
Well, that's all part of, you know, putting this record out, which I'm in the process of doing now with your help. And that all of this is very, very fascinating. But, you know, without sounding too cerebral about it, it's all down to the songs. You know, as long as I can keep constructing the songs, then there's a reason for the website and there's a reason for putting records out. So to me, it's the lifeblood. I have to keep running songs.
Yeah, and I think it'll be pretty. Pretty interesting when you get your website up, especially some of the stuff you've been telling me about it, and the way, just the connection you'll have to people that like your music.
Yeah, it's been a long time. This is, you know, very, very new to me. So, to do everything so independently you know, just with people that have been with me for many years is exciting. And the most exciting thing is that the expectations are not, anything more than getting my art out. In the early years when you start, all you can think about is, you know, writing the single and getting instant success for that, which is the right way to think about it. But at this point, after, you know, many years of working, it's a chance for me to put my deeper music out and things that I've cared about for many years and have thought I've been too precious about not putting out. So I hope in the next 5 years to put a lot of my material out under my own label. So it is exciting, but when I suck back and think about what it's all about, it's about being a songwriter, and that's really why I want to put these independent records out. It's more about being a songwriter more than even being an artist.
That's fantastic. My plans for the next year actually are I really want to concentrate on doing more projects of passion, as I call it. Mm-hmm. Projects that, you know, I'm fortunate enough to make a living and working in audio, but really where my passion lies is in music. And so I've recently found an artist that I'm going to work with developing and maybe produce the EP for. And just want to do it because I just want to have something that I can throw a little heart into, and then you don't have the pressures of making money. You don't have the pressures of, you know, trying to please anybody but just the artist and yourself.
And I have heard some of the work you're doing with this artist, and I must say to everybody who's listening, it's great stuff you're doing.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know what? It's more the artist than me, but, you know, we'll get to, I'll just update people as that comes along. But really it's just a way for me to use, you know, my love of music in a whole different way. And so I'm really looking forward to
doing
that.
Good for you, man. I think that's a good thing for everyone to do. Do for the love, lots of it.
Why we started this anyway.
Well, you know, let me tell you a really quick story. I literally got to the point, and I was actually talking to Martin once about this, where I wanted to do something in music. And I was, you know, working post-production. It's so not music. And I wanted to get into music. I wanted to use EQs. You know, I wanted to do all the really cool stuff. And so I literally was going to put.
Well, this artist you're working with is more of a live artist.
Yeah. Well, but yeah. I wanted to do all, you know, all the real fun musical stuff that I just haven't been able to do. And I was going to put an ad out in Craigslist. Literally, I was going to say, I've got a studio, I've got equipment. If you want a demo, you know, just send me an email and let's see what we can do. And basically, I was just going to hold auditions and, you know, whoever I liked.
Oh, my God, he's going to get a lot of emails. Whoa, you're going to get hit now.
No, but seriously, but I was just going to – I wanted to meet somebody who needed a demo and maybe wanted to do an EP. And I was literally about to post it on Craigslist, and then I got a friend of mine who called me and said, hey, I've got somebody who needs a demo. And
she needs 3 dB at 6K. It was a match made in heaven. The perfect EQ curve. She's got perfect.
But, next thing you know, I got a phone call, and it just kind of all worked out. So
how you met her?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it's
she's a talented artist as well. I've heard some of the material.
And yeah, it's fantastic. And it's just going to be really exciting to see that go. And you know what? There's, you know, you don't have to worry about money. You don't have to worry about all
Quincy
that.
Quincy Rodriguez.
But,
It's a new artist, QR. Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, listen, we'll wrap this up now. But first of all, I want to tell you guys that this is the 19th podcast.
Wow.
I know it is.
Not for me.
For Bobby, this is 4. No, and Rob has been to every podcast.
Yay!
Do I get my perfect attendance trophy?
Rob gets his perfect attendance.
A medal.
You haven't been to every podcast.
No, I was, exactly.
Am I the only, I'm the only one?
Wow. I was.
I really have to get a life.
Well, you know what you get for that? You get a free DMP7.
Oh, excellent.
Which you submitted.
Excellent.
And I want to thank everybody for being on the podcast, because we get a lot of really great response and people really enjoy it. And, you know, if it was just me talking, it'd be really, really boring.
Hey, and thanks to Mike for putting this all together.
And then we have to thank all the listeners out there, because it's really great.
Both of you guys are
That's
brilliant.
Right.
Thank Terrific.
You.
Thanks, Mike. And happy Christmas to everybody.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Happy Christmas. Happy Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. What else is there?
Kwanzaa.
Happy Kwanzaa.
Happy New Year. Mm-hmm.
Boxing Day.
Just be happy.
There you go.
Just be happy.
There you go.
So I just want to remind everybody, if you have any questions or if you have any topics you want us to touch upon, just send us an email at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Also, you can check out our MySpace page. That's myspace.com/audionowcast. And we're going to be giving away some great gear next year. Our first show, we're going to be giving away a Roland D2 drum machine.
Ooh.
It's a little groove box, and that'll be kind of fun. And Rob has yet one more DMP7 to give away, but actually he's actually gone above and beyond the Call of Duty on his DMP7s.
Well, because I had no choice, because it turns out the DMP7s were in really, 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 really bad shape. So I now have them disassembled on my kitchen table, and I'm having to replace some of the components so that they'll work at least a little bit. All the rubber dried out.
But, yeah, you don't understand.
Yeah. Like, I can't give away trash.
No,
I
but
can't
if,
give away trash. I
if there's one person you want working on your gear,
yeah, Rob.
That's Rob. I mean, yeah. Rob's had keyboards torn apart. And
yeah.
And
meanwhile, time-wise, it would have been cheaper for me to just buy him a new friggin' console. But I'm determined to get these things working.
Hey, all I know is I just remember when we were in Singapore and you took apart that the wave frame, like just disassembled it practically down to just the bolts.
Yeah, I have horrible memories of that as well.
And we should also point out that this is the first time ever that Rob has ever gotten rid of anything ever.
That is true.
That may be true.
That is true.
That may be true.
He won't even sell anything, but he will give it away.
Well, to a worthy person, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, all right. Well, that's about it. And
wow. So when we come back, it's going to be like almost NAMM time.
You know what? That's
Ooh.
Right.
Ooh.
We've got some good shows when we come back. And also, like I said, we have a new sponsor that I will tell you about when we come back. And
we should do the podcast at NAMM next week. That'd be a good one.
Well, there you go. But
we're sitting at NAMM.
That doesn't sound good.
We're
All right. Well, hey, from all the guys, we're just going to wish you happy holidays, and we will see you next year.
See ya.
Have a
good year. Bye bye.
That was a good sound effect for NAMM. No wonder you do this.
Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Westwave Audio.